Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Welcome everyone to a brand spanking new episode of After Work Drinks With. This week we are so happy to bring you a conversation with Shah Elise, who we have wanted to get on the podcast for ages and have managed to tie down this week.
Yes, so Shah is amazing. She's a model, an activist, and she is best known for her platform, Girls Will Be Boys. It started off as a fashion blog, and last year she relaunched it as a kind of amazing digital platform to celebrate the whole spectrum of gender identity. And she does that a lot through short films, which she creates and directs. And she kind of created this viral movement with the short film hashtag, Oh My God, She's Bald. And it just explored the way that hair plays this really important role in the way that we understand gender and race and the kind of intersection between those two things. And that became a kind of viral sensation as well at the time. So yeah, we are super stoked to be talking to her.
As always, please rate, review, and subscribe, and we will see you on Wednesday.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. Again, we're very excited to have you.
I'm excited to be here.
So we wanted to jump straight into things, I guess, with kind of a heavy topic. But obviously there's been like a huge momentum online at the moment around Black Lives Matter. And there seems to be a misconception from our perspective, at least being Australians who live in London, that the UK is kind of acting a bit like they don't have the same problem here, or like it's a US problem. Are you noticing that? And
yeah, because people are saying that, why is the UK protesting when no one's getting killed here? Like, the police brutality is not as bad here. But it's like, there's racism isn't, it's really like complicated. And I think people think racism is really black and white and simple. But actually, there's stuff going on in the UK that we still need to fight for. Like, for example, I've forgotten her name, but the woman who was spat on.
And, oh, Belly, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And therefore, and the people that spat on her weren't charged. And it's like, there's still racist stuff going on here. There's still mostly POCs fighting on the front line for with regards to coronavirus. There's still more black women dying in childbirth. So it's like, there's still things that we need to fight for. I just feel like people think that we're only fighting for justice for those in America, which, yeah, we are. That's what the protests are about. But also, we're just fighting for a change in the system, like, period. And I think people don't see it like that. They just think that we're just getting angry because stuff's happening in America. But actually, there's stuff happening left, right, and center, everywhere. And we just want the system to change. And whilst everyone is recognizing it now, people are listening now. People have, like I said on my Instagram post, people, because of the pandemic and being in quarantine, people are having the time to read all this stuff and sit with their white guilt and just recognize, oh my God, I've been silent, I've been complicit in all of this racist stuff that's actually happening around me. So now it's like because it's such an uprising, it's the time to talk about it and to be out there fighting for it because people are actually listening.
Yeah, it's the same in Australia and New Zealand. Like, racism is, yes, so overt in America because of their fucked justice system, but it's just as bad over here as well and in the UK. It's just, it's everywhere. So I think, yeah, it's so important that everyone addresses it now. So in all of the books that I've been reading, I've just actually started Roxane Gay's Bad Feminist for the first time. And it was the exact same, she had the exact same story where she recounted being a child and being taught about racism from her parents from a really young age. Was that something that you experienced, or what was kind of your first memory of realizing that this is something that existed and something that was going to impact you?
I always remember the first time I was called the N-word. And I was around 7 or 8. And we were at like this kind of not theme park, but it was kind of like a fake theme park market thing with my family. And it was nearish the seaside. So it was predominantly a white area, but we had family there. So we'd always visit. And I just remember we were walking around the market stalls and a white lady pushed her pram into the back of my foot, and I turned around and said sorry just because I was a polite kid, and then she was like, you fucking N-word, and then just walked off. And I was like, hold on a minute, she pushed her into my foot, I turned around and said sorry, and then she went and called me that. So I went and told my mum, because I'd never heard it before. It's like I subconsciously knew what it meant, and I knew that it was offensive, and I knew that it was offensive because I'm black, but I didn't necessarily know what it was. So I just went up to my mum and I was just like, this lady just called me, I think it was this word, because I didn't even know what it was. And then she just flipped, and like her and my stepdad, who's actually white, just went over to her and were just like, this ain't the fucking 1960s, how dare you? And then she was like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean it, and all of this stuff. And I was just like, from then I was kind of like, wow, people are really gonna have something to say about me before I've even opened my mouth. And then it's just like other things that have happened, I feel like it's only now when I'm having these conversations and learning more about microaggressions and sort of like racism that isn't necessarily overt, that I'm looking back on friendships that I've had where friends would joke around and call me a slave and be like, oh, but I love you. And it's just like I didn't even realize the stuff that I was going through until I'm now learning more about it and having like a name to call it. But yeah, that's my earliest memory.
God, I'm so sorry that happened to you. It kind of leans on something that you talked about in a recent Instagram post where you were explaining the concept of misogynoir, which is this mm-hmm. idea of misogyny specifically targeted at black women. And just the fact that incidents like this, it kind of robs black children of their childhood or of their innocence because it's introducing you to something so hateful and adult so young, at such a young age. Very messed up. We wanted to talk about your platform, which is a huge part of why we wanted to talk to you in the first place, which is amazing, which is called Girls Will Be Boys. Can you talk about why you wanted to launch a platform and then about what the name was and what the idea was behind having this space online?
So it actually started as a fashion blog between me and a close friend of mine who actually lives in Switzerland. And I was visiting hers and we were going on a night out, and we always dress kind of androgynous. And I just said to her, like, what's the dress code for the club? I said, do we have to dress like girls or can we just be boys? And then she was like, we should start a fashion blog. And I was like, And I thought about what I said. And I was like, obviously there's the phrase, boys will be boys. And I thought, girls will be boys. And at the time, I had no awareness of non-binary identities or just no depth really to my knowledge of gender in general, apart from my experience with it. So we started as a fashion blog. But because of the distance where I was based in London, she was in Switzerland, it didn't really work. We weren't able to get content. And I'd actually had an idea to do a project on women who have shaved their hair since I had shaved my hair in, how old was I? I think it was like 7 years ago now. So I'd always had this idea, but never known how to execute it. And I actually watched a documentary on ID with Ajua Boa, and it was about feminism. I don't know if you've seen it, it's really good. And I was like, oh, I want to make a documentary, but I'm not a filmmaker. So I just asked a couple of friends if they would help me film this project. I messaged people on Instagram. We filmed it over a weekend, and then we had Oh My God, She's Bold. And I was like, right, I'm going to relaunch the blog as a platform and create mini films or documentary styles and talk to people. And then the more it was received well and people were interested, the more I was like, this needs to be a platform where I pass the mic on people's experiences with gender, because I'm still learning. I wasn't even out at the time of, I say out, quote unquote, because I don't know. But yeah, I wasn't even out at the sort of relaunching Girls Will Be Boys. So I'd even learned about myself and questioned my gender identity and just all that stuff. I feel like we're constantly learning. And the only way that we can learn about this stuff properly is through hearing people's personal experiences. So then, yeah, it just became a platform for passing the mic on people's experiences.
You've said that everyone should shave their head once in their lives. Mm-hmm. What did shaving your head represent for you?
Shaving my head was like a fresh start. It just felt like part of the missing piece to the puzzle, because I felt like having hair that wasn't mine was performative. And I wanted, I kind of thought about, why do I want this long, straight hair? Why do I want, I just was really thinking about why I had this hair, why I had these weaves, why I had these wigs, why if I went on holiday, I couldn't like go in the water because of my hair and all this kind of stuff. And my hair was constantly breaking because I was chemically straightening it. And I was just like, I just want to start again and just let go of all this stuff that is holding on to sort of like society's idea of being beautiful. And I just wanted to strip myself back and be enough without hair, because I feel like that's a massive thing that your beauty is placed in as a woman. And I just wanted to get rid and see how I would go about navigating life with no hair. And once I've never grown my hair since, never.
Yeah, well, you look bloody good with it shaved. I think I would.
Thank you.
I don't know how I would look.
I would
shave
look
our heads right
horrendous
now, Grace.
Yeah.
No, you need to do it. Everyone needs to do it. That's another thing that I said in a podcast recently, is that we've rejected this notion of dressing for your body shape. But why do we still have our haircut based on what we think suits our face?
Mm. Yeah, so and true. It's such a feminist issue. Like, that's what one of the most eye-opening things about reading your work was, I just hadn't thought so much about how hair is so central to, like, patriarchal beauty standards, mm-hmm. to Eurocentric beauty standards. It's such a key question in intersectional feminism. And we spoke to Kitty Cash last week, and she was talking about, you know, being on sets for massive fashion shoots for massive publications and having a hairstylist that couldn't work with her. It's like, once you wade into that minefield, you realize that hair is such a, it's like a microcosm for so much other yeah. problems. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like I've had bad experiences because I was a signed model for a bit. But at the time I didn't have, I'd already shaved my hair. But for example, my sister, she's mixed race. And whenever she's been on set, she sent me photos from being on set before, where there's five people stood around her holding different parts of her hair, not knowing what the fuck to do with it. And it's just like, there's so many pockets.
And did it become a way for you to, like, start to experiment with the gender, like, with breaking the gender binary? Was that a kind of gateway through which you started experimenting, or was that something you were already doing through clothes anyway?
I feel like I was already doing it through clothes. People used to say I always dress a little bit different, because I'm from a place called Leicester. So it's like in the Midlands, it's like a lot smaller and not as, I don't know, people aren't as expressive as they are in London with their identity. But I'd always stood out in Leicester, but I was still conforming to, you know, like wearing uncomfortably tight dresses and massive heels and like eyelashes and stuff. But I felt like it was when, because I shaved my hair when I moved to London, so it was when I was surrounded by people who were just like so comfortable in trying out and experimenting with their expression, that's when it kind of like, it just all slotted in and made sense. So it was around the same time, but I still feel like at the beginning of having a shaved head, it was, I didn't feel as comfortable being more mask as I am now. So I would always wear makeup. I would always wear earrings. I used to wear a lot more fitted clothes, but then I kind of just, once I let it go and just, I wear makeup because it's fun. I don't wear it because I feel like I have to. And I wear baggy clothes because they're comfortable. And I kind of feel like I didn't allow myself to have that. Also because I was rejecting being queer. Mm. So that was like another like little intersection in it where I was going the complete opposite way with wearing loads of makeup and making sure that I presented femme because I knew that my hair took away something that made me straight passing. So because I so badly didn't want to be a stereotype, I clung onto it for so long. But then once I just let it all go and then started dating women, everything just made sense.
You just touched on it before, but you spent years as a model, and it's no secret that the fashion industry is a pretty horrendous place for women of color. If you don't mind talking about kind of your experience as a whole in the fashion industry.
It was horrible for multiple reasons. I was signed with one of the biggest agencies in the world, and they didn't manage to get me any jobs and kind of said, oh, but you know, like, it's still new to the industry, having a woman with a shaved head. It's still new to the industry, having a woman with bleached eyebrows. It was very much tokenism. Whenever I was signed somewhere, it was tokenism because they didn't actually know what to do with me. They didn't push for there to be change in the industry. They felt like having me on their board was enough. And also because I've never been stereotypical model size, so 6 to 8 or anything smaller, but then I'm also not plus size, and there's not a lot of representation of in-betweenies. Modeling agencies don't know what to do with in-betweenies, so size 10 to 12. So there was also that on top of it. But yeah, it was mostly tokenism from the agency side, and then being on set is, you know, the makeup, not having the makeup. I was once on a shoot and the makeup artist did the other model's makeup or face and then turned to me and was like, should we put any makeup on her or should we just, and I'm just like, but the other model has a full face. The only reason why you wouldn't put makeup on me is because you don't know how. So it's small things like that, but as a whole it was just trash.
And you touched on the size thing, and that's, I think, something a lot of people don't realise, is that girls who aren't quote-unquote sample size and aren't quote-unquote plus-sized are encouraged to either, like, size up or size down to fit into it, which is insane because that, like, middle ground represents a huge portion, probably the majority of people who are consuming your brand. So was that something, were they discussions that were had with you about your body?
No, but it happened to my friend who was contacted by my first agency to join the agency. She's actually from Sweden, so she flew into London to meet them. And then they were like, oh, actually, you've lost a bit of weight, so you wouldn't be classed as plus size anymore. So we're not really interested. And it was kind of like, huh? Like, what? That didn't make any sense to me. But I feel like it's one of them questions where I'm always going back and forth on whether it lies, the responsibility of changing this lies with the agencies or with the brands. So, for example, if the brands aren't representing models that are, like, probably mostly their consumer size, then they're not going to be asking for the models. But then it's like, but if the models are not being showcased on the agencies, then obviously the brands won't even, you know what I mean? It's like,
because that's what we found working in magazines. I think there was a lot of passing the buck where it was like, if you were in a magazine, you would say, we're only shooting the same type of girl because that's all the agency is offering us. And if you're an agency, you're saying, well, no, magazines are only shooting a certain type of girl, so that's who we're going to put on our books. And then it just becomes this, like, crazy cycle where no one's taking accountability.
Basically, that's what the industry is.
Yeah, it's a mess.
Instagram is such an interesting tool because it's so useful for creating online communities and activism and reaching new people. But then if you spend too long in that world, it can obviously become quite harmful for your mental health. How have you kind of navigated that balancing act?
It's tough, especially with what's going on right now. In general, I'm pretty open about when I'm going through stuff, and not as like, not that I want a pity party or anything like that. I just feel like if I'm transparent about it, then I don't know, because I did feel like an onus to let people know why I wasn't responding to their texts or why I wasn't so active on Instagram, which obviously I don't owe them shit. But I felt like it helped me to be honest with where I'm at every point if I am online. So if I'd gone through a few days where I'd literally just been in bed because of my depression, then I'll talk about it, because also it might make somebody else feel seen. And I think that's it's helped knowing that even though I'm going through something bad, if it makes someone else feel less alone in going through the same thing, then it makes me feel a lot better and it's easier to deal with. But also just like taking breaks, sometimes I'll just put my phone on airplane mode and just switch it off. But that's in general. But I guess it's been a lot harder with what's going on with Black Lives Matter, because it's a time where I want everyone to be talking about it, but then at the same time it's bringing up past trauma and it is overload of the information that I already know, and then seeing that people are newly outraged is frustrating. There's just so many different emotions with it right now, so especially now I have to just leave my phone and then just come back, or if I post something, post it and don't scroll down.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, I feel the same way in terms of being open and then realizing that you're helping people and it makes you feel a bit better about it. We have both been super open about, I've just recently gone through my first ever bout of depression, super fun for me. But we've both been super open about seeing a therapist on the podcast, and I saw recently that you saw one for the first time. When we saw therapists, we were just like, I can't believe we haven't gone sooner. Do you feel the same?
Yeah, honestly, like, because I've had friends that have told me like therapy is like essential, and I've seen that people have said it's essential, period, like whether you're going through something or not. But then obviously there's the thing with wanting to find the right one, and also that it costs a lot of money and I didn't necessarily have that money, so I had to go on a waiting list through the doctors, and it actually took around 6 months for me to get my first therapy session, and it was also a limited amount because it was free, because it was on the council. So it was great that I had it, but I do feel like it's hard to access it if you don't have the money, but I do feel like it's essential if you do have the money, and I'm grateful for
just so unfair.
Yeah And also it's like, I initially was like, okay, if I'm gonna benefit from this therapy, I need to be able to be completely open, so I need to have a queer Black woman. But then also, how many queer Black women therapists are there in the tiny area that I live in London? It's kind of like a, I don't know, it's hard. And obviously there's not that many because, oh, it's just the system, it just goes round and round and round.
Yeah.
We wanted to go back to Instagram for a moment. You shared some crazy DMs and emails you've been getting recently. I just like, we both, our jaws were on the floor when we saw it, and it's essentially, from what we gathered, like white women asking you to share their anti-racism resources on your social media So they can get followers out of it, basically. And so many of the women that we follow have been getting a mass amount of followers in the last couple of weeks. And the common theme is stop coming into my inbox and telling me about your racist uncle who you hate. Stop coming into my inbox and asking me, what can I do when I've given you a billion tools? Like, what has that experience been like, having to deal with a bigger platform, but then all of the bullshit that comes with that?
Honestly, I'm raging, and I was talking to Floss about this actually. I find it difficult to be appreciative of people finally giving a shit, because it's not even like I've been talking about this now. I've got posts dated back to like 2016 where I'm talking about this stuff. I did a white privilege post like 2 years ago. It's just, it's like a backhanded compliment that I'm getting, even though I'm getting like these reparations, which is like great because it's paying my rent.
That post of yours was so fucking funny.
I was literally like, oh my God, I'm going to lose followers from this, but I actually don't give a shit because
white guilt is paying my rent right now.
Yeah, it's like, well, it's, what are you
as it say? Should. Like, yeah, as it fucking should.
Yeah, I don't know. It's it feels like a backhanded compliment. Like, I give a shit about you, but I didn't before. Or like, I'm willing to listen to you and take on board your resources, but I didn't give a shit before. And it's kind of like too little, too late. But also, if you want to follow me, then follow me. Because I'm still going to talk the way that I've always spoken, and I'm not going to silence myself for my oppressors any longer. So it's kind of just like, I don't feel like I have to change or anything, but please don't come in my DM. It's so frustrating. Honestly, like, it's so frustrating.
And people following you to your email account when they can't get you on DM. Yeah. That was the craziest one.
Honestly.
Like, hey, you didn't reply. Yeah. I'm just double checking. Can you post about me?
Do you know what? Honestly, it's crazy. It's not even just emails. I had someone who actually broke data protection because I'd worked for their brand, and they WhatsApped me when I didn't respond to their DM. So it's the audacity. Like, people, I don't understand why people feel like they have a backdoor access to me. No, like, it's never been like that. Even sometimes I won't reply to my friends in a few days because I don't have the energy. And sometimes I just don't even want to reply to you, period. It's like, why do you feel like you have that access? It's just rude.
Yeah, it's crazy. Something you talked about with Vogue was feeling like you had imposter syndrome. I think that was in specific context to launching Girls Will Be Boys. Can you talk a bit about, and I think that's a very common feeling that people feel no matter how big or successful they get. Can you talk a bit about how, if you have, you've managed that feeling?
I feel like imposter syndrome alongside depression is a tough one. And I also feel like it's hard because of, obviously it's more common in marginalized women. But I feel like because there's this narrative, it's like a silent narrative of there only being one spot for a black woman. There's competition within the black community. So it's hard to like feel like you're enough and that you're not always in competition when society has placed that on you anyway. Obviously, now everyone's trying to be a bit more inclusive, but up until now, it's like there's only going to be one black woman hired for this job. So then you have to fight among the people that you actually want to be lifting up and growing together and throwing compliments back and forth. But it feels like there's competition a lot of the time because we all know there's only one spot. So I feel like there's intersections to imposters, there's intersections to everything, but definitely to imposter syndrome because we are pitted against each other for jobs.
Yeah, that's so funny. I hadn't thought about it in that way before because we have thought about it in the sense of being women in the workplace. But then, yeah, even more so. It's, yeah, that must be fucking intense. So you touched on earlier coming out as queer, and it's obviously Pride Month. Now that we're talking, and we recently spoke to a good friend of yours who said the same thing as you, where she said she suffered from immense internalized homophobia or biphobia in her case. What was your journey towards acceptance like?
It was definitely, I can't quite put my finger, I still need to do the work and unpack this properly as to why I had so much internalized homophobia. Even though my sister came out as queer, my younger sister, before I did, and she was a lot younger than me. I only came out really 2 years ago. But I just feel like stereotypes have been placed on me my entire life for being Black. And I didn't want to be another stereotype of being a queer person. So I rejected it for so long. I think it was just trying to avoid stereotypes. I didn't want to be, oh, she's got shaved hair, she wears black clothes, but like she's gay, or, and I don't know, I guess you just go with what you know. So when you're fed a heterosexual narrative your entire life, you just go with it. And it's just all the stuff that is standard as a female, that all you see in like movies is like guys and girls, and you're supposed to long for like acceptance from the male gaze and all that kind of stuff. And I think I was just constantly trying to work out who I was, period, because I was a Black woman with a lot of white friends, and it was just, yeah, I was just trying to figure out where the hell I even fit in. And then being queer on top of that was just way too heavy, so I just like rejected it. And yeah,
I love how your sister came out. She was just like, yeah, or yeah. A girl. When your mum said you might get a boyfriend, my little sister did the same thing. I was like, why are you so cool? I was like, I don't know who taught you to be so cool. And then she was just like, I said, which is like so ignorant now, but I was younger. And I was like, do you have a boyfriend? She was like, I have a girlfriend. I was like, oh, cool. And then I was like, and then ages later, I was like, are people weird at school about this? Because she was at high, they was like 16, going to high school together. They're still together now, and she's 19. And I was like, are people weird at school? And she was like, oh yeah, but they can just get fucked. I was like, why do you, like, I was like, I'm such a fucking people pleaser, and I'm like 29, and you just, I was like, miss it, Jane.
Yeah, she's literally never given a fuck. Like, she never really had boyfriends, but then she was much more of like, I don't know, she was more into like just being active, and like she always had energy, and I just feel like she wasn't ever, even the fact that she never had like, she never had like body dysmorphia or any of the other crap that like most women have. Mm. That's why I'm just always so in awe of her, because she just grew organically. And it's weird because we had the same upbringing with the same parents and the same household.
Yeah, I know. Same.
But she just turned out to be, I don't know, she's just an icon.
We wanted to go back to fashion specifically for a moment. Obviously, there was that meme that circulated this week making fun of how fashion brands were like, blonde white woman times a billion, and then a week ago it was like black tile, yeah. And now like five Black women and like a fucking Desmond Tutu quote. And we posted that meme and we had like a mixed reaction, because people were saying, you know, don't make fun of people who are trying, and we obviously you're like, shut up. But then it's also that thing of, you don't want to discourage people from changing even though it's incredibly late. Do you feel hopeful that this is going to be a long-term shift, or are you still quite skeptical that it will pass?
I do think it will shift. I don't know how long it will take, but I do think it will shift. And I think, I don't know how long it will take to reach the people that will make the big changes, because I don't know, like Instagram bloggers or whatever posting, oh, share, uplift melanated voices or whatever. It's like, okay, so it changes like a few more followers follow Black people, but it's like, where is it all changing? There's so much to be done that I feel like it's going to take a long time, but we have to start somewhere. And it feels like this could be igniting the start of like something, at least. I haven't seen this in my lifetime. So I feel like, yeah, this is definitely a start to something. But with regards to like the people being offended by the thing and being discouraged, it's like, get a grip. First of all, it's a joke. And like, second of all, I just feel like if you're really gonna, people put their energy into the wrong things. So many people are more like, they put too much energy into being offended by something rather than just like changing. So it's like, of course, that's why I wrote the post that was like, you're going to feel guilt. Of course you're going to fucking feel guilt. If you don't, then it's not going to be genuine change. Of course you're going to feel guilt. You're going to feel embarrassed. You're going to feel attacked. But that's just the way it goes. Like, we as Black people have felt a lot harder things. And if you can't handle that, then it's kind of like you're not really cut out to do the work and you're just happy sitting pretty on your privilege.
And you're not going to get a pat on the back. I think that's the biggest thing that people are grappling with, is they expect to post something and then have everyone be like, you're amazing, well done. And it's like, no, this bit is just the bare minimum.
Literally.
And you're going to do all of this work and you're not ever going to get a medal or a clap.
And
or
you should be doing work that no one even knows you're doing.
Yeah.
Like all the time.
Exactly. So. It's like, this is not like, you don't get no gold stars, no Blue Peter badge. Like, you've got to just keep going, and we've been doing the work whilst also going through shit since we were like toddlers. So why do you think that you can just, it's like I said, you don't study for a test overnight and ace it. This is not that situation. Like, you're gonna have to sit in shame for a very long time in order to even get close to what we felt all of our lives and make change.
I agree, where it's like, this is so great that this is happening. But then when you think about how, then you just think about the fact that Trump's the president and you're like, cool.
Oh God. I'm getting started on that. Oh my God. Honestly, that's like, where I lose hope. That's what.
Yeah. That's a thing. Cause I'm like, we should fucking abolish the police. And then I'm like, well, is anyone going to do that?
Yeah. I think even like, did you see about, George Floyd's officer that killed him, got bailed out.
Yeah, bail.
Because he raised the money. He raised $1 million worth of bail funds. Who the fuck is sending that money? That's what scares me.
It's so sickening. That should be fucking leaked, that list.
Yeah, that's what is like, oh shit, are we really going to make, is it really going to, I don't know. I try and stay hopeful, but like, Yeah.
I think one of the best things that I've noticed, that actually Kitty Cash again pointed out to us last week, is the way that Instagram and social media is being used to really shame these people into probably being too scared to be outwardly racist, at least. Like that Karen's Gone Wild Instagram account that is literally
so good.
Like a racist woman, and then 2 minutes later her name has been found, her state's been found, she's been fired. It's like, you can't get away with that shit anymore.
Yeah, definitely. That feels good, can't I?
Yeah.
Even like the other day, when I was walking home, the police pulled over a driver and he got out of the car and the police were talking to him, and it was a young Black man, and like, everyone on the street just stopped and we're just watching them.
Really?
And to make sure the police officers were so, they were like, hey mate, yeah, like being so overly friendly. And it was like this awkwardly really friendly thing, because the whole, like, it was this intersection and everyone just stopped and looked, because they think there's just this consciousness of no one is going to be the bystander who lets something
that's
happen anymore, you know? Yeah. And that felt like a tangible change. But
have you noticed specifically, after these past couple of weeks, have you noticed when you go out people act different towards you?
I haven't really been out because of like COVID.
True, London.
I haven't really been out. I think, I don't know. I feel like I said this in an interview that I did the other day, it's like sometimes I don't even necessarily, because I have so many boxes of marginalization ticked, I don't know which one is the thing that's making people react to me in a certain way in certain situations. Do you know what I mean? It's like, is it because I'm a woman, or is it because I'm Black, or is it because I have a shaved head, or is it because you think I look gay? Like, what? I don't know which one it is.
We've just had friends who've posted like, white people are smiling at us on the street and it's weird. Like last week.
Oh my God, that is so weird.
Yeah, so
fucking hell,
like that's not the answer.
Bloody hell.
Anyway.
Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, our last question that we always ask that we just forgot about.
Yeah, go on, Grace. You do so, it.
Because this is After Work Drinks With, the premise is people we'd like to be having an actual drink with, but because of coronavirus, we can't. Could you please tell us, if you do drink, where you like to drink in London and what your drink of choice is?
I like to drink somewhere. Oh, that's really tough because I haven't been out for a drink in like 4 months.
I know.
When the weather's a rooftop bar. There's not that, no. East London, because that's where the queers are. Like any bar, and it depends on the weather, but I'll either go for a pale ale or, and depending on my budget, if I'm feeling fancy, I'm gonna get a spice rum and lemonade.
What is it?
Spice rum.
Oh, spice rum and lemonade. Yeah. I thought you said a cocktail. I was like, ooh.
Oh no, I don't really like, they're too sweet. I don't really like cocktails. Yeah, but I would honestly like anywhere in Eastland, anywhere in like Shoreditch, Dorset, all the queers are there. It's just like fun.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.